Live from London, this is The Breakfast Show with James Clark on Teachers Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to a truly jam-packed show this morning, because we are talking consent, peer and peer abuse, and schools' responses to everyone's invited. I've got guests joining me from the PSHE Association and the Brook Sexual Health and Wellbeing Charity, plus real-life experiences from teachers in secondary schools and pupil referral units. This is one show you do not want to miss.
Live from London, this is The Breakfast Show with James Clark on Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live on the Podbean app or desktop player. Just head over to www.podbean.com/lsw/ttradio or search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio.
Good morning, it's Wednesday. It is time, of course, for the Wednesday Morning Breakfast Show with me, James Clark. I am super excited to be here today, and I'm really excited to welcome some absolutely amazing guests onto the show. We've got Jenny Fox from the PSHE Association, Lisa, who is Head of Policy and Public Affairs at Brook, Lisa, who is a teacher from Pupil Referral Unit, and Hannah Weaver, a secondary school RSHE lead. We're going to be delving into the depths of consent, peer and peer abuse, and of course, the response to everyone's invited. So however you are spending this wonderful Wednesday morning, I hope you are well. Welcome. Thank you for spending it with me. Or if you are listening to this back, as I know hundreds of you have been to our previous show, I hope you are enjoying it. And don't forget that for the next few weeks on the Wednesday Morning Breakfast Show, we are covering a whole host, is that a word? It is now a whole host of PSHE, RSHE related topics. We've covered consent today, and we've also covered creating safe spaces, talking about sexuality, and lots more. But today's show is super exciting because it's such an important topic that we're going to discuss today, and it is something that I know lots of schools up and down the country and even internationally have been coming to me and saying, actually, you know, what do we do? How do we talk about this? What's the right way to go about it? I'm really interested what other people are doing. And I think that's the really exciting factor when we talk about consent, when we talk about peer and peer abuse. We all know it's important. And most importantly, we all want to get it right. We all want to know, actually, how can we make sure that our young people, our students are in a safe, inclusive space where they feel able to speak out, where they feel able to have those conversations, and where they feel able to be prepared for the future so they can keep themselves safe when they're not in the building of schools. So that's what we're going to be discussing today. I'm very excited to welcome shortly some amazing guests onto the show. But don't forget that this is Teachers Talk Radio. So this show is here for you. So please do feel free to throughout today join in via the Podbean Live app on the chat. We would love to hear what views you have. And of course, you can share the show as well, which some of you already have. So thank you for doing that. You can share the show today, and you can also send your love as well. We all love a bit of love in the morning, don't we? So please do that. And of course, you can get involved in a conversation on Twitter as well, which if you're not following us, what are you doing? The Twitter handle you want for that is at TTRadio2021, or just search the hashtag on Facebook and Twitter, hashtag TTRadio. My guests will be joining me very shortly. I'm going to be joined by Jenny Fox first from the PSHE Association and Hanny Weaver as well. And they'll be joining me within the next sort of 10 minutes or so. Before that, though, I am going to start you off with the news for today. So you can sit back, relax, get yourself ready, pour yourself your second or third cup of coffee, which is what I'm doing this morning. And then I'll be back for you very shortly after your Wednesday news. Sorry about that. There just seems to be a bit of delay on the on the news wanting to play, so we won't have the Wednesday news, although it will probably cut in at a very random point very soon, I'm sure. But very shortly, they will be coming us. And I asked on Twitter what your thoughts were when it came to talking about consent and peer-on-peer abuse and how you have those conversations in school. And we have had some responses. I'm just going to look at those now for us. I love as well that so many of you have been commenting and sending personal messages through about this. And hello, we've got a chat there from Saudi Arabia. Hello and welcome to us for joining as well. So someone responded when I asked about how you approach this at school, and their response was somebody who said from a reception class, so this is someone in primary who said, in reception class, we say that at any time, if someone is doing something you don't like, you hold up your hand and say, stop it, I don't like it. The expectation is that whatever it is, the other child must stop that behavior immediately, building agency too. And I really like this one, and this was from at Fozzie Jev, a great name as well, who is a English music lead and at a primary school in the early years. And I really like the fact that actually it's having those conversations at a young age, because it seems to almost be, I don't know if it's just me, but sometimes the other way around, that when we get to secondary or sixth form or older, it's almost as if people become a little bit more scared about having those conversations about, you know, private parts, as we call it, when we're in primary, or, you know, safe space and safe touch. And actually, at a younger age, children as well, particularly, don't seem to, in a way, be as concerned about it or as embarrassed about it. But as soon as they get older, that completely changes, which is really odd. But then again, you know, it's human nature, I guess, in some ways. So while we're waiting for the news to load for us, I'm just going to read a very short advertisement from our sponsors for you. So we are very lucky on this show to have some amazing sponsors with us. So I'm just going to tell you about those very shortly as well. Unfortunately, the system seems to want to be a bit slower today, but here we go. So one of our sponsors of the show is Oxford University Press. If you need support with your phonics teaching, Oxford University Press now has 3 DfV validated programs to help you read, write, including phonics, floppy phonics, and the brand new essential letters and sounds. Essential letters and sounds will get all your children reading well, quickly, using phonics books that you may already have in your classroom. Developed by the Knowledge Schools Trust English Hub, it's affordable, easy to use, and makes teaching phonics with letters and sounds more effective. To find out more about these programs and receive support from your OUP expert, local education consultant, visit www.oxfordprimary.com/phonics. The other sponsor we have is the Teachers Love Stationery.club. If you love stationery, as many teachers do, then you should check out Teachers Love Stationery. Sign up and you get a box full of carefully selected stationery delivered through the post each month. Items include pens, pencils, stickers, pens, erasers, highlighters, and many more besides. This will change from month to month and will be around a monthly theme. TLS pencils, stickers, pens, erasers, highlighters, and more to surprise you all. All the items you'll receive are useful for teachers and won't just sit at the bottom of your drawer. To find out more, visit www.teacherslovestationery.club. And I'm literally, as I read that, I'm sort of looking around my desk now and I really need to sort out my stationery. I seem to have such a bit of a mix and match. Maybe I'll get there eventually. But today's show, and I was thinking about this before I started this, about how did I cover this and how did I talk about consent in schools and what support and advice did I get? And it's really interesting that although we'd always talked about consent and although we'd always talked about peer-on-peer abuse at points through our curriculum and what we do, actually, when I thought about it, I thought actually, well, what actually support was there when I went into it? And I was probably quite responsive after the Everyone's Invited website. And for those who don't know, Everyone's Invited was a website that was set up and used as a forum, I guess is the best way to describe it, for people to share stories and experiences of peer-on-peer abuse, either at primary or secondary or university. And lots of schools were named as part of this. And some of the stories are extremely... I guess the only way I could sort of describe it is extremely harrowing in lots of ways. And you sort of read them and you can't believe that they take place, but unfortunately they do take place. And unfortunately, it does sometimes take people to step forward and be honest and open and speak for us to be able to learn and understand that change needs to happen. And we as educators in schools, no matter what age group we are, have a really powerful position to play with that and can be really in control and can make a huge difference, which actually is a lot of pressure. It can feel sometimes like, oh my goodness, you know, we've got to change the world. We've got to get this right. But there are resources out there. There are some fantastic people you can turn to. And I know that we're going to hear from a few of those very shortly as well of what you can do. So if you are listening to this at any point today feeling completely stuck, or you've joined this call, or you've picked up this conversation and you're thinking, actually, I don't have a clue what this is about. I don't know what I'm doing. Then please do make sure you stay tuned, because I guarantee you from the amazing lineup of guests we've got over this next hour, hour and a half, you will no doubt learn loads of brand new tips. And also actually what we can do and sharing best practices. And that's how I learn, is from looking online. I think we're very lucky in the teacher world. I know sometimes those who have been on edgy Twitter and those things, sometimes the conversations get a little bit heated, but that's because we are all very passionate. But there are some amazing support out there. And when I started the consent topic and started thinking about it, I went to a classic, and that is, and if you've never watched this, I urge you now, obviously once you've finished listening to the show, to go and watch this video. Because I think every child up and down the UK must have been shown this at some point in their education. And that is the tea is like a consent video, or consent is like tea video, which was done by a local police organization. And it really is absolutely amazing. And someone just commenting saying there, I knew you were going to say that. I love it. It is a fantastic resource. And what's great about it is sometimes with lots of topics that we cover, and I'm aware that I'm probably coming across very upbeat and positive on a really kind of difficult topic that we're going to discuss today. But actually, when we talk about these difficult topics, consent, peer and peer abuse, racism, homophobia, neglect, whatever it might be, child abuse, all of these things, it is very easy to come across quite doom and gloom. And this might be a little bit controversial, but actually, I think sometimes we can have a bigger impact if we unpick it and don't just go straight for the throat and straight for the emotions and straight for the negative. Actually, what that consent video does is it explains it in a way that's really amusing to the young people, but they get it. And most importantly, after a lesson I've done with that last year with my year sevens, they are going around and they are talking about the cups of tea and consent. They are going around openly in the playground discussing it. And you're like, wow, that is how impact is measured. That's how I know that they are taking that information in, because yes, they're having a laugh and a joke because they find it funny, but actually that's really connected with them. And that's something really powerful. So that's just my first bit of tips of wisdom today, but I know the guests coming on very soon. And I can see that Jenny is waiting to join us. Have got lots more as well. Just going to read these comments coming through from TSCW on the chat here. My colleagues laugh at me for going on about it. It goes across so well. It absolutely does. And I think actually today I'm going to sit and make myself watch that video. I think it's great fun. All right. I am now going to be joined very shortly by Jenny. I'm just going to try and connect her and also see if I can get my sound working. So hopefully that might happen. If not, Bob Bean's not going to happen today, and that's okay. We'll carry on. So very soon joined by Jenny, who is just coming through now for me. Good morning, Jenny.
Morning, James. How are you?
Yes, I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, really good, thanks.
How's your morning been so far?
Short. I've only been up for about 10 minutes.
Oh, I'm jealous. I was up about 5:30 today, but it's okay. thank you so much for joining us, Jenny. I'm really excited to have you here. I know I've been extremely lucky to have had you as well on the show previously, but please tell me again, Jenny, more about you, your route into where you are now. And I've asked you before, what your favorite breakfast item is going to be. And I'm actually going to change that question on the spot to trick you. And I'm going to say, if you could only have a plate full of one piece of like a traditional English breakfast, what would that one item be? If you had to get rid of all the rest and you can only have one, what would it be? But first off, introduce yourself, please, Jenny.
Yeah, hi. Thanks so much for having me back. My name's Jenny Fox, and I'm the Senior Subject Specialist at the PSHE Association. So the PSHE Association works to support all schools in England to develop their personal, social, health and economic education. And I run a small team of subject specialists in the association. And before I joined the PSHE team, I was a PSHE lead in different schools in London. So I've been teaching since longer than I care to remember now, 2009. and it's lovely to be back and talking about this very important topic today. And in terms of the breakfast choice...
I'll put you on the spot. That's it.
Yeah. Can I say fried mushrooms? I think they're the best bit of a...
Oh, not what I was expecting. Different. Absolutely. You could say that, no problem. Well, thank you so much, Jenny. We are really lucky to have it. And I know, particularly when I started this conversation a minute ago and saying about resources and some people coming forward and not really knowing what to do or where to go. I know, no doubt, at some point in the next sort of 15, 20 minutes, we'll talk about the amazing resources that the PSHE Association do have to support that. But let's start off by looking at consent. And where do we start with it? Because consent is absolutely massive. And I think in my mind, when I first heard about consent or started talking about consent, and I know it's a Wednesday morning, so, you know, it's might be a bit too early for this conversation, but I don't think it ever is. You know, I do automatically go to thinking about sex. I just think consent, sexual activity, that's kind of all I thought about. But actually, it's much wider with that. So in your mind, you know, where do we start with it all?
Yeah, it's a great question. And for me, consent is something that I think we should be teaching about and, in fact, modelling in almost every element of school life. So we're teaching children about consent when we're telling them to ask before they take something that doesn't belong to them, right down in the smallest of primary school, but in nursery. We're modelling consent for young people when we ask them to sign up to the school's code of conduct when they join our secondary school, or when they go to get permission to go on trips. All of that is an opportunity to show them and model them that we consent to things that we care about or that are important to us or that require permission from somebody else. But of course, we also need to be embedding that teaching about consent throughout the PSHE curriculum. And I think there's a specific space there for children to learn how to ask for, give, not give and withdraw consent, and also learning about why that matters so much. But again, I think you can do that kind of right the way through the school and across the PSHE curriculum long before you start thinking about sexual consent and that particular context in which it's taught or talked about.
Absolutely. But I think, you know, there will be some people, and I've definitely experienced this not quite as upfront and bluntly, but I know other teachers have, who will say that actually, you know, it's the job of somebody at home to teach young people about consent, relationships, etc., etc. And it's not a school issue, and it's not our place to be talking about it. You know, what would you say to them? And I'm sure you've got a few things you want to say, but obviously we'll keep it PG. But what would you want to say?
I guess I'd start by saying I kind of agree that that sort of understanding about personal relationships, can be developed as much at home as it can at school. And like a parent partnership is so crucial for any school's PSHE curriculum. So I definitely say that schools aren't trying to kind of take away the role of parents in helping their children prepare for a happy, healthy adult life. And it might be that those children at home are having fantastic discussions that really benefit their understanding of what's happening in school. But we also know that consent in particular can be a really tricky thing for young people to navigate, especially when they're thinking about the online world or when there are perhaps mixed messages in the media. And we also know that not all children get that kind of support and help and role modeling that they need at home. And those children who are maybe particularly vulnerable, it's especially important that they have a PSHE curriculum in place that's going to do that for them. It's kind of like a leveling up of all young people across the country, that everyone is now guaranteed to be taught about consent. Because before the statutory guidance, there were some young people who were leaving school having never had that conversation. And we're suddenly at the age of consent, having never really thought about what that meant. And so this is the PSHE curriculum is the way to make sure that the school does it for everybody. And we have this universal understanding for young people as they reach the age of maturity.
And I really like that, like you said there about it. It's not about, you know, basically it's not about taking over or replacing the role of a parent, carer, guardian, whoever might be at home, but actually it's more about enhancing that and working together. So I guess there is really an emphasis and importance of schools somehow, and I know this is probably a very different topic, but somehow really strengthening that relationship, particularly around PSHE related topics such as consent with home. I guess that's quite important as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about all of us working together. And again, kind of modelling consent through our discussions through our kind of respectful discussions with parents about this is what we're going to be teaching your children and this is how it's going to work. And for young people to kind of see those negotiations taking place.
And you mentioned there about, you know, talking about it in all forms of kind of school life, particularly with and I think that's so true. It's almost weird that we kind of, the language thing probably comes a little bit confusing because, you know, we say about trips, we say permission forms or things like that. And actually it's kind of, they're consent forms really, but we kind of sometimes will change the language and use permission forms and sometimes we use consent forms. And I think actually just calling it consent for everything would make things a lot more clearer, but we do like to make things complicated at times, don't we? But what kind of, you know, what age do we talk about this? Because what age, I mean, I'm sitting here now as a secondary school teacher, a sixth form teacher, so I'm used to teaching the older end about it. Some people will say, again, it's too young to talk at primary, but then there was a teacher who commented on Twitter earlier about what they're doing in their reception classes. So I guess the thing is, how do we start those conversations at a young age? What should they know at a young age? And really, by the time they leave us at year 11, what should they know?
I'd agree. It's definitely not too young to start a primary in an age-appropriate way, obviously, because there we're sort of laying the foundations about a basic understanding of sharing. And I thought that example on Twitter was absolutely lovely. Exactly the kind of conversations that you'd want to be having with reception-age children. So it's those sort of necessary building blocks about respectful relationships, about asking for giving and not giving permission in play is really crucial when children are young, to understanding what consent might look like in intimate sexual relationships by the time they get to secondary school. We're actually just writing a whole new pack of lessons around consent. We have some that are up on the website at the moment, but they're just for key stage 3 and 4. And in discussions in the team, we realised, first of all, they needed a bit of an update because they're a bit old.
Yeah.
But also that it was such a shame, there was such a gap that we didn't have anything for primary school. So we're adding 4 lessons for primary, 1 for key stage 1 and 3 for key stage 2, which will help to introduce this in a really kind of age-appropriate, gradual way about understanding which parts of the body are private, about understanding what kind of touch is appropriate and inappropriate. And then as we go up through the year groups, by the time you get to year 11, we're expecting students not only to understand what consent is and the sort of legal and moral questions around it, kind of demonstrating how to do it in terms of the types of things they might ask, the types of things they might say, if they want to give or not give or withdraw their consent. And then to those wider sort of societal questions, like being able to challenge victim blaming narratives or identify contexts where pressure or coercion is being used. But also, as you mentioned earlier about sort of not the doom and gloom, also recognising the role of consent in kind of pleasurable, respectful, intimate relationships. And then challenging things like the role of pornography potentially on what people's perceptions of consent are. So there's a lot to cover and lots of big kind of moral questions, but it can definitely build all the way through PSHE, right from key stage 1 upwards.
Just nice, easy, lighthearted topics really for you to talk about and write about, which is absolutely amazing. And I've just got Hannah Weaver has just joined us as well. I'm just going to unmute Hannah so she can join the conversation. Hannah, I don't know if you're there. Hello?
James, good morning.
Good morning, Hannah. I think I can hear you. Yeah, fantastic. Welcome. We're talking genuinely here about consent. I don't know if, Hannah, you just want to start, and I'll come back to you, Jenny, in a moment, Hannah, by sort of saying a little bit about you and your route into education and who you are, your life in 30 seconds, as I say.
Oh, right. So my name's Hannah Weaver. I am the lead teacher for relationship and sex education at King Edward's School in Lichfield. We're a very, very large comprehensive school. We've got nearly 2,000 pupils. I have been teaching for nearly 20 years now. I started teaching RE, which is my main subject, and I've worked at various comprehensive schools across the country, really, lots of different areas. I then took 5 years out to go and work for an international charity, which was actually working with cricket education, but we were dealing with educating around health education, particularly HIV, AIDS and FGM. And I did that for 5 years, working in Kenya and Uganda. And then 5 years ago, I decided that my vocational calling couldn't be ignored again. So I went back into teaching. And for the last 5 years, I've been at King Edward's. And we've really grown our PSHE and RSE program there. And I've been the lead on that since.
So again, just, you know, between you and Jenny, just nice, easy jobs. Keep yourself, you know, low level. I guess we were talking there about consent. I guess for you, could you just maybe say, you know, how do you approach it in your school, or why do you, and why do you think it's important to even really be talking about it? Because I was chatting with Jenny at the start of today's show, and we were sort of saying that actually some people might say it's not the place of a school. A school should be focusing on their English, their 1+1, etc. Why are we wasting education time talking about consent, etc., and relationships? You know, what would your response be to that? And how do you teach consent in your school?
So I think that for me, you know, consent is part of it's part of who we are as human beings. You know, we have to consent in all sorts of different ways at all sorts of different times. And for me, and I think for the majority of teachers that I know, we're educators as a whole person. So it's not just about, you know, teaching English or teaching math. It's about teaching children and that kind of that education in the round. So for us at secondary school, we deliver the RSE on a spiral curriculum, and we start sort of very early on in year seven, just looking about how you have good friendships, good relationships. I was listening to what Jenny was saying earlier, and yeah, I think that's the key, and I don't think it can be taught early enough. I think that, you know, from when children are very little, we should be able to teach them about, you know, the fact that they are responsible and have the right to decline to be touched in any way, whether it's a hug from a great auntie or whether it's, you know, something more sinister as they grow up. So our curriculum really deals with looking at the consent issue in the round, and you know, how you negotiate friendships, when it's okay, and feeling comfortable within those friendships and within those relationships, right the way through up to then dealing with sexual consent, and then we keep revisiting that topic right the way up into sixth form as well. So I think it's a really important issue, because it sets the boundaries, doesn't it, for work in life, for those, you know, sort of more deep lasting relationships when you're older. And again, interesting what Jenny was saying about consent within a relationship. I think that's really, you know, really important too.
Absolutely. And Jenny Morgan there on the Podbeam Live app joining in and saying, totally agree with holistic approach to developing the whole person. Hannah, remember, please do get involved with the chat on the Podbeam app and share your thoughts with our amazing guests. So I think if I can, I'm going to come back to you, Jenny, talking about kind of here peer-on-peer abuse. And if you could perhaps give us a little bit of a definition in your words of what does that mean? What does it, and what does it look like perhaps?
Yeah, I'll do my best.
Yeah, no pressure. That's it.
I think for me, peer-on-peer abuse means any form of abuse that's carried out between young people. So whether that's discrimination-based bullying or the unwanted sharing of nudes or offensive jokes and innuendo, I think often when we're using the phrase peer-on-peer abuse, what we're talking about is sexual harassment. And so we would define that as an unwanted conduct of a sexual nature, which has the purpose or effect of causing an intimidating, hostile, degrading or offensive environment. So that's definitely what I'm thinking about when we're talking about peer-on-peer abuse, but I think it can show itself in lots of different types of behaviours, from that kind of, oh, it's just a bit of banter sort of conversation that you hear in the corridors, to unwanted touching, to sending links or passing on nudes. All of that kind of would create that environment where peer-on-peer abuse is more commonplace.
Thank you. I think you've passed. Well done. I'll give you a level 9. That's it. I'm really excited because I'm just going to bring in a moment another guest for us today. And I know that guests will be coming in and out as people need to and live their normal Wednesday lives in between the show. But Lisa's going to be joining us, who's head of policy and public affairs at Brook. And when Lisa joins as well, who's just connected to us now, I kind of want to ask all of you this next question. And the next question I'm going to ask you all is kind of actually basically a little bit about the website that happened, which was Everyone's Invited, which was a platform that was set up for young people or adults to kind of share their experiences of, you know, in lots of cases, peer-on-peer abuse when they were younger. And what you have found from either your school or organization, your response has been to that, because in my mind, as a teacher on the ground, obviously consent, peer-on-peer abuse, always been important, always been a topic we should cover and speak about. But actually, it seems to have come particularly more to the forefront following the, you know, the allegations, the things that have come up from Everyone's Invited. It's a little bit, I guess, the best way I can describe it is it's almost like what happened in the England football game when they had the display of the racism from one of the, I think it was, I always get confused, I think it was Bulgaria, I think, I get the wrong country, that they were playing. And actually, people know that there's a problem with racism in sport. People know that it's not a brand new thing, but suddenly seeing it in front of them and it coming to the forefront kind of shakes everyone up and they get angry and riled and they want to re-challenge it, but they sometimes need to sit face to face. So I feel like that was the same and with Everyone's Invited. So in a moment, I'm just going to ask you that question about actually what your response has been to that and what you think we should be doing next. But first of all, I'm just going to welcome here, I believe. Lisa, can you hear me?
I can, yeah. Can you hear me?
Hi, Lisa. How are you? Oh,
yeah, very good. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Lisa, just to start with, could you please give us the life of Lisa, who you are, where you come from, how you got to where you are now, and everything in between in 30 seconds. No pressure.
Oh, that's a lot. Okay. I'm head of policy and public affairs at Brook, and we're a young people's sexual and reproductive health organisation. And we do two main things. We do a lot, but the two main things we do is provide clinical sexual health services for young people. But we also do a lot of work in schools around RSE and have spent 40, 50, 60 years trying to ensure that everybody else is doing good RSE too.
Amazing. You just nailed that. You must have practiced. That was awesome. So if I can start with you, if you don't mind, Lisa, because obviously particularly being, you know, head of policy, public affairs, you must have had some interaction or some kind of conversations around when the Everyone's Invited website came out and kind of how you've responded to that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we had a conversation. We've had lots of conversations. Last week was Sexual Health Week and we talked about consent all week. And one of the things that somebody said, which I think was really true, was Everyone's Invited was awful. And the, you know, the extent of reports of sexual violence and abuse and harassment in schools was terrible. But also for people like us, and I think Jenny would agree, who've been working in this field for a long time, it was sort of Groundhog Day. One of the reasons we ended up getting mandatory RSE was because of a report that came out in 2015, 2016, a parliamentary report about the extent of sexual abuse in schools. So this keeps coming up, like you say, like racism in football. And every time it rears its ugly head in a really major way, people gasp and say, oh, this is awful. What should we do? And mandatory RSE has been a response to that. So I guess our response to Everyone's Invited is like, okay, we're all on the same page now. We all see this is happening. This is really important. How can we really, really get this right this time? Because we can't let another generation of school kids go through this.
Absolutely. And Hannah, if I come to you next, kind of how's it for you? Because I know that my students were, some knew about it, some didn't. And then when we spoke about it, some were absolutely horrified by it. They just couldn't believe, which horrified I felt almost in a positive way, because they could just couldn't believe that this had happened. What was the responses for you?
I think exactly as Lisa has said. I mean, this is something that we'd been looking at since I was appointed back in 2017, and the Girl Guiding report, It's Just Everywhere, was published. I think Lisa described it perfectly. It's just Groundhog Day. Sort of anecdotally, we get things from our students about what's happening, particularly the older students on their way to and from school as well. So not just kind of in the school environment, but our sixth formers wear uniforms, so it's sort of fairly obvious that they're going to school. I think it had a big impact. I actually think the impact in terms of the talk around it would probably have been more if it wasn't for COVID, and the fact that, you know, students were in and out, and that the focus a little bit was taken from the report that came out of Ofsted. But it was quite damaging, and I think that the Everyone's Invited website made a lot of schools sit up and take notice. I think I'm right in saying that there are, you know, very, very few, a handful of secondary schools across the country that haven't been named on that website, haven't been reported. So it is, you know, fairly clear that this is an issue across the board. And for us, it's just really opened up those conversations. As a school, we are currently undergoing a whole school audit using the Beyond Referrals framework from the Safeguarding Network. So that's a process that was started before the summer and is now ongoing, just reviewing policies and procedures, engaging with parents and staff and students and other stakeholders as well. We've invested in training for our staff, and I think that's something that is absolutely vital, because I think that a lot of staff know this happens, particularly on the kind of the sexual harassment side of things, the name calling, the sexual slurs that can be said, but they don't feel particularly confident in how to address it, rather than kind of closing the conversation down or just ignoring it in some cases. And I don't think that's, you know, that's not because staff don't care, it's not because staff don't realise that it's an issue, but it's actually the skills to be able to address it confidently and have a conversation around that and use it as a learning point.
Amazing. And Jenny, I'm just going to go to you here, because I see that you've mentioned this, and I was listening to what you were saying there, Hannah, and I've not actually heard really, and I don't know if anyone else has, of this Beyond Referrals document. Jenny, because you've commented it there, could you just tell me a little bit more about that?
It's I was just going to first of all echo some of the other things that Hannah and Lisa have said. Absolutely. I think staff training is the absolute key here, as it often is. And I know that we have sort of really time poor teachers, and certainly in the last year or so, teachers are still kind of dealing with so many other issues around school and education at the moment. But certainly encouraging staff to understand why this is an issue, to recognise it, to have the confidence to challenge it, and then also, of course, to address it in the curriculum as well, I think is just so, so crucial, and creating that kind of a culture of telling. So I think the Beyond Referrals toolkit is just one of those really helpful ways to do that. It kind of talks about the whole school approach and policy, and what do we do after we have referrals? How do we help young people to feel confident? And we saw in the recent Ofsted report about sexual abuse and harassment, the worries that young people have about reporting, about reporting and what's going to happen next. And so the Beyond Referrals document, I think, really helps schools contextualise that and think about how to support the young people who have spoken up.
Amazing. Thank you so much for that, Jenny. And loads of thanks so much to our guests. They're really commenting on the chat there with some follow-up thoughts. So please do have a look at that. I'll read some of them out. You know, at least saying that it's also vital that we tackle the underlying messages, values and culture within which abuse and harassment can take place. And if you are just joining, don't forget that you can listen back to these amazing conversations that these guests are having via the Podbean app or on other places such as Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And after the last one we had a couple of weeks ago, over 200 of you within a week did tune in and were still commenting and sending me questions after the show, saying how amazing it was and how insightful it was. So thank you to my guests for that. I'm just going to keep you for a little bit longer, some of you, particularly Jenny, because I know you've been here a bit longer. So I'm going to ask you a couple more, because I think, you know, you're absolutely amazing. I don't want to lose you guys. But I've got to ask you, and this is probably a little bit of a difficult question, so I'm going to ask you all this one. You know, are schools doing enough, or are we letting young people down? You know, let's be really blunt about this. Are we doing enough, or are we letting young people down? And that might be in terms of the fact we're letting them down because we don't have the resources, or, you know, we don't have the time. You know, what is your thoughts to that question? And if I may, I'm going to start here with Hannah. I'm going to come to you first.
I think, James, that we can always do more. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right in terms of lack of resources, lack of time. We're very fortunate at the school that I work in and that we have a PSHE lessons timetabled across the curriculum. But we get 1 hour a fortnight. And within the PSHE curriculum, we're teaching relationship and sex education, citizenship education, careers education, financial information. There's just so much to pack in. And I think that that time is critical. And to actually really get to grips with this, it can't just be a 1 hour a week PSHE session. I think it was Lisa who mentioned in the chat about, you know, changing attitudes and cultures. And that starts, you know, really from the first day in school with school rules, with whatever your school ethos is, your school motto, your statement of intent in terms of, you know, what it is you're about as a school. So are we letting young people down? I think they have been let down, but I think that schools are doing at the moment, I think the schools and the teachers that I'm working with locally are really trying to address that issue, and to provide, you know, good quality relationship and sex education, good quality PSHE. But we can always do more. It would be wonderful to have a huge budget and lots of time table space, but we know that we're kind of competing against, you know, maths, English and science. So yeah, I guess it's just one of those, you know, on my wish list, there definitely would be more time, but it's about managing what we've got and how we get the best out of what we've got at this current time.
I mean, wouldn't it be nice to have a big budget? That's the things you would do, the people you could bring in. But alas, that's the joys of schools in every subject, isn't it? Lisa, what about you? Because, I mean, you obviously, with Brooke particularly, must work with a whole array of literally probably hundreds upon hundreds of schools across the country in the area. So what about you? Do you think we're doing enough, or are we just doing what we can, or could we do better?
Well, I totally agree with Hannah. We always have to be aspiring to do better. And of course, we do work with loads and loads of schools. And the schools that we work with obviously are getting us in because they've already addressed their lack of skills or a gap in their skills. And they really want to do the best they can. And I think all of us will know that it's the schools that we're not contacting. We're not in contact with them.
Yes,
not going
of course,
in there.
Yeah.
They're not asking us for support that we're more worried about. So a school that comes to us and says, we're really struggling with this, is a school that's getting on the job and doing their best. And I think that's really important. And I really agree with what Hannah said about, you know, there's such competition in the curriculum with the core subjects, and schools are really picking up the pieces. Schools didn't create this problem. Schools are picking up the pieces that society has created with gendered attitudes towards boys and girls, different expectations of their behaviour, allowing certain behaviours to go by because we call them boys' behaviour or girls' behaviour. And I think we always feel with schools that they're in a really unfair position. They're being told all the time that knowledge is the most important thing and that they have to get across all these kind of core subjects. But at the same time, we're also saying, you've got to deal with the mess that we've left you in. We've got to deal with the children we're sending to school who are coming from a society in which we still haven't dealt with the fact that sexual abuse and harassment and sexist ideas are ubiquitous. They're everywhere. They are in our media. They are everywhere that young people go. They are on the street. And so I feel like, of course, schools have to do better, and everyone's invited made that very clear to everybody, I hope. But I don't feel like we should be hitting schools over the knuckles. We should be giving them real resource and real support to do this job well. And the fact is that the amount of money that was invested in implementing a completely new mandatory topic was really risible. And we need to be saying to the Department for Education, schools need to have a budget that they can spend on the training that they need so that they feel confident about doing a good job.
Absolutely. I think, Lisa, we just need to start a campaign to get you to become the new Minister of Education. There's a vacancy seems to be going and coming, so I'd vote for you, Lisa.
I'd rather it went to a teacher, actually. It's shocking to me that most Ministers of Education have never had any sort of job in education, and I wish...
Well, why would you need that? amazing. Thank you so much, Lisa. Jenny, I do want to... I'll make this your final question, Jenny, because I know you've been with us a long time today. So I guess for you, that same question of, are schools doing enough? And again, the PSHE Association works with loads of schools up and down the country, and I no doubt has, and I know Peers Association has run free webinars and things to support as teachers with this. So kind of twofold question here is, are schools doing enough? And actually, how can the PSHE Association help schools, and what can you offer to support them? And I know you've already mentioned some of the lesson plans that are coming out shortly too.
Yeah, thanks. Absolutely. I think schools are doing their best in a really difficult situation, as the others have said. And let's not forget that lots of this, the peer-on-peer abuse that we're talking about, is also occurring online. So it's not even that it's occurring within the school context.
Of course, yeah.
I think it's been a long journey to get to the place that we're at now, and the introduction of the statutory relationship sex and health education guidance, and that becoming statutory, I think, is the biggest step forward that PSHE has taken in a very, very long time. So while there were schools who were doing their absolute best with very little support and very little guidance up until this point, and there has been some great practice across the country for a long time, there's also been big areas where schools have needed much more support and much more guidance and haven't known how to do this well, or have been trying to cram PSHE into the tiny little gaps they've got in form time or drop down days or at the very end of term. So it is fantastic that everyone is now going to have that much more consistent education. And I think it's a shame that that didn't happen sooner, but now that we've got it, let's really seize that opportunity and make sure that we implement this as effectively as we possibly can. And that, as far as we can tell from all of the conversations we've had with all of the schools across the country, is definitely what everyone is trying to do with this guidance. There are people who've been so kind of waiting for this from the department for a long time, and I have now got the reason to get it into schools effectively. So the PSHE Association can support in loads of ways. We are really excited about the new consent lessons, which are going to launch next month. We also are offering lots of twilights on various different topics, which is just a sort of hour of training to upskill you in various different aspects of PSHE. But we're particularly running some sexual harassment ones this term, and we'll be doing again next term. We also have kind of half-day trainings where you can get a much more deeper look at relationship, sex and health education if you're the PSHE lead and want to embed it. And we've got loads and loads of materials online to help you plan your curriculum. So if this is something that where you're thinking consent, where do I start, or sexual harassment, what does that look like in the PSHE curriculum, come to the website and have a look at the models that we've got available to help you plan that in.
Thank you so much, Jenny, and as always, insightful and wonderful to have you here, Jenny. Is there anything, parting words of wisdom you'd like to share? And also, if they want to reach out and contact more, where can they find you?
Oh, gosh, parting words of wisdom.
That's it.
You're all doing a fantastic job. Keep going. It can only get you can only keep improving from where you are now. And if you want more support and guidance, find us at www.pshe-association.org.uk. And you can find us on Twitter at PSHE Association as well.
Thank you so much, Jenny, and thank you for your time today. And as I say, if you have just joined us, please do make sure you listen back on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and Podbeam and everything, because you do not want to have missed the many words of wisdom that Jenny and all the other guests have had so far. But thank you, Jenny, for your time this morning.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.
Bye, Jenny. Hannah, I'm just going to go to you on this next one. And it's something you mentioned in the chat there about and training provided by finding training, and obviously the training that Brooke does is, and I agree, absolutely amazing. And I've used Brooke for all of my staff training to sort of help them develop and grow. But for you, how do you, obviously I've got it timetabled as well. I know lots of people in schools have PSHE or SRE, however they call it, timetabled. Plus they might have it where it's tutors and form tutors who have them deliver it. How do you ensure that your staff are comfortable, upskilled and trained enough in a topic to be able to deliver it to what the level it needs to be? Because none of us are specialists. We're all learning this. We can't go to do our PGCE training and being a PSHE teacher. We kind of develop and learn it. So how are you ensuring that your staff are the best and most equipped that they can possibly be?
That's a really good question, James. And I think that for us, as I said, we at my school, we started this process around about 3 years ago, where we began to sort of look at our PSHE provision and looking at our, particularly the relationship assets education provision within that. And it's been a slow process. It's been a process of trying to bring people on board with us. And the way that we've done that really is through trying to upskill teachers to provide them with training and the time for reflection on the materials. Our PSHE is delivered by our form tutors. So everyone who has a form in school will at some point be delivering relationship and sex education topics and lessons within that. And it's been a quite a slow and steady process to bring some of the more reluctant teachers on board. And I think, again, that reluctance doesn't come from the fact that they don't want to do it. It's actually they're worried about what it is they're going to be doing. I think some teachers are worried that they're going to have to talk about, you know, their own relationships and their own sex lives and how are they going to handle difficult questions.
No, we'll see that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that is a real worry. I also think that in our ITT training and with our new early careers framework, that we need to have more time to upskill our younger teachers, the younger members of our profession as well. But within our school, what we've done is we have a program whereby once every half term, we have 2 hours of training time of our meeting time, which is dedicated to upcoming topics in PSHE. So myself with the head of, alongside the head of PSHE and our head of learning technologies, we'll put together the content that's to be delivered for the upcoming lessons. And we will send that out to our staff, and then we will have training time to talk them through the materials, to give them extra information, to point them to any extra sources of information, so that they can then develop their lessons according to their own style, because I'm sure you know there's nothing worse than just picking up a lesson and having to run with it if it doesn't suit absolutely, the way in which you're used to delivering. So yeah, we've been very lucky, and our senior leadership team have really invested in that. So as part of our ongoing CPD, we have this training time, and that's I guess a bit of a quick win really, because it's something that we have to do. We have to do CPD meetings after school, we have to, you know, all have our different meetings, but the fact that this is now a calendared meeting where tutors are expected to come along has been extraordinarily helpful. And again, one thing that I do is provide regular updates to staff about what's happening in the world of RSE, particularly with the peer-on-peer abuse thing. So we've done little videos, I've done little just sort of quick tips of how they can address things in the classroom, which just record and send out and they can watch at their leisure. And we all, at the beginning of term, actually, the whole staff at our school undertook the Feminista training for teachers. Again, that's another excellent resource that's out there in sort of training teachers to think about how they can tackle some of those underlying issues that are going on around sexy stereotypes and gender stereotyping that's taking place. So I feel very privileged, actually, that I'm in the position that I'm in and have a very supportive leadership team around me, along with the head of PSHE as well. I know that not all schools are in that position, but there are just some little things like that you can actually do as quite a quick win.
Absolutely. And thanks so much for that, Hannah. I'm going to come back to you shortly with your kind of parting words of wisdom and what kind of where people can reach out to you. But Lisa, I want to talk very briefly about Sexual Health Week. How did it go? How was it? What themes came up, or what did you find you were getting most in terms of from schools and from teachers, etc.?
Yeah, thank you. Sexual Health Week was really an excellent week, full of activities and events, not only that Brooke put on, but local authorities, schools joined in, lots of other organisations. And I think this was a brilliant year, obviously, to talk about consent, what with everything that's happened, with everyone's invited. And I was involved in various activities, but the one that jumped out for me that I kind of learned most from, if you like, was chairing a webinar on how to talk about consent with boys and young men, which raised loads of sticky issues, which teachers have come to us with often saying, you know, this is obviously a gendered issue. We know that overwhelmingly perpetrators are boys, victims are girls, but how do we approach this subject without making all boys into the subject of our kind of our sort of telling off and our scorn, or make it feel like it's almost inevitable that boys will be perpetrators. So what we had a brilliant discussion about that, and for me that was very, very rich. And in a way, whatever way you take into consent, you're always covering the same basic fundamentals, which are around what does good look like in a relationship. And how do we equip people to have those conversations that will ensure good consent and ensure that people are really engaged in healthy, intimate, romantic, platonic, familial relationships in ways that we want them to be. So that was, for me, the highlight of Sexual Health Week. But we had all sorts of amazing conversations going on. And I know that lots of schools picked up on the week and had their own special events, as well as sexual health organisations, young people's organisations around the country. So a lot of that stuff will be going up on our website, where you can log in and kind of re-watch things you didn't have a chance to see the first time round.
Amazing. And I think that's such a really interesting conversation, because I know that there is a lot around kind of masculinity and talking to boys about it and how to approach that. And what sort of, if I can just sort of unpick that a little bit more, what sort of things emerge from that, or sort of ideas or strategies came from that?
Well, I think there was a real concern that the way in which this subject is broached can really alienate young men and turn them off instantly. So going into a classroom and saying, you must not assault women, you know, I'm exaggerating a bit, but it's very easy to look at it through that lens, that you have to change your behaviour. And I think what everybody agreed during that conversation was that actually starting with what looks good is a much better way of doing that. So we start with a consensus that we all want healthy relationships. We all want to get the good that you get from healthy relationships, the feeling close, the feelings of intimacy, the feelings of safety, the feelings of kind of familiarity, all the things that you get from a good relationship. So we have to start by defining what that looks like. And for some young people, they won't have seen that modelled at home. They won't have seen that model through the kind of things that they're looking at online. So there's something about starting with what is the good and understanding that the vast majority of people of all genders are aspiring to have those things, would like to have those things. And from there, looking at what it takes to have a good relationship, and then to start looking at what can threaten that, what gets in the way of that, what are the things that are harmful and damaging. And it's important not to pretend, not to sort of go, hear no evil, see no evil. Let's not talk about gender. Let's not talk about the fact that this is the majority of perpetrators are boys. We have to talk about that, but we also have to relate that back to everything that they're experiencing, seeing and living in their lives, and not make it about some kind of biological essentialism. Boys are not born with the intent of hurting girls. They are taught certain attitudes and values that enable that or facilitate that, and sometimes even reward that kind of behavior. So let's start with what relationships look like when they're functioning in a really healthy way, and all the amazing benefits that a healthy relationship, whether it's with your family member, whether it's an intimate relationship, whether it's a friendship, that brings you so much benefit in your life and good feeling. Let's start with that, and then let's say, you know, what gets in the way of that? And let's start to look at harmful behaviours. And yes, we do have to look at them through a gendered lens, but we mustn't be saying, you know, boys do this, girls do this. You know, boys, we often stumble across schools who've done this in a slightly old-fashioned way, where they talk about things like consent as, you know, boys trying to get girls to comply with them in some sexual way, and girls being the kind of defenders of their chastity. And actually that doesn't help, because we know we're all very different. There are some young men who really aren't ready for sexual relationships and feel quite pressured into them, and there are lots of girls who feel actively that they want to start having sexual relationships. So let's not stereotype within our own work, and let's look out for those ways that we inadvertently might do that in our own work.
Absolutely incredible. Thank you so much. I'm just going to come back to you very shortly. Again, these are your kind of final words of wisdom and kind of what Brooke can offer and support, because just like the PSHE Association and many other associations out there that support the work of PSHE, Brooke do so much, which is extremely helpful. And I know, as a teacher on the ground myself, I'm incredibly grateful for that. But before that, Hannah, your final words of wisdom for us and kind of where people can reach out to you. And I know you've got your own school Twitter for RSHE, which is amazing as well.
Yeah, we do. So the school Twitter, if people want to reach out and comment or you know, give me any useful advice or tips, we are at Kes, K-E-S, Litchfield, R-S-E, and that's the Twitter handle. Words of wisdom. I just think we're all doing the best we can. We're all trying to do an amazing job. I know that at the heart of everything that we do, the pupils that sit in front of me every single day, they're the reason why I got up and did the job. They're the reason that make me want to really advocate and be so passionate about this. I'm a mum of two young teenage children myself, and I know that the world that in which they're trying to navigate at the minute is an extraordinarily difficult one. And it's interesting actually just listening to what Lisa is saying about how we can sometimes alienate the boys through our conversations. You know, it's not all boys, and I think there's a tendency sometimes that we can do that. But thank you for having me on this morning. It's been wonderful actually, and I feel very privileged to be in the presence of Lisa and Jenny, who do such fantastic work in supporting us teachers that are on the ground delivering this.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your time as well. You've been amazing, and hearing it from the incredible work that you're doing, and no doubt you will help so many teachers to listen back to this. So thank you, Hannah. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you, James. Off to teach year 10 now.
Yeah, have fun.
Thank you. Bye.
Lisa, so just to sort of finish up with you then, kind of, is there anything else kind of you want to add or say, and also kind of what Brooke can do and offer? Because those people who haven't yet accessed the resources, many of which are free on the Brooke website, particularly the training ones, might not know what there is and what you can do.
Yeah, sure. I mean, in danger of turning this into a loving, but really hats off to Hannah and all of you teachers who are actually doing this every single day and trying to crowbar this really important work into such a packed curriculum. So I can't ever get over the work you're doing. And we're really wary of kind of blaming schools for not doing it enough because we know how difficult things are. So what can Brooke offer? We in certain areas, we can actually come into schools and run workshops. We can talk to you about the kind of work we do in terms of sexual health and reproductive health. We talk about consent, pornography, the whole kind of range of topics. But for lots of people, they won't be in an area where we have workshops in schools on offer. So we have loads and loads of training. And you did mention our online training. We have a whole suite of training courses which are free. It's e-training that you do in your own time. It's very interactive. And most of those modules not only provide information and an ability for you to work through your own questions and issues, and not a huge amount of kind of scientifically accurate information, but lots of them include very practical tools that you can download in order to actually support teaching on a whole range of topics, one of which is consent. And last week we relaunched our consent e-training in a kind of updated form, which took account of a few years of feedback from the hundreds of teachers who'd done that course. So we're really excited about that. You can see all of our free e-training at learn.brooke.org.uk. There's also safeguarding training and traffic lights training, which is around different sexual behaviours, on the same site. Our main website, which is brooke.org.uk, is just a really good place to refer young people with questions. It's a really good place to educate yourself before you do a lesson. If you think, I'm running a lesson on anatomy and I don't even know the names of body parts that I'm doing.
Yeah,
I'm
doing very true.
I'm doing a lesson about reproduction and I've forgotten what the fertility cycle looks like. Do come to our website. Do send young people to our website. We're always very wary of saying to young people, Google information, because we know that they're very likely, if they use any sexual terms, to end up stumbling across porn that probably wasn't what they were looking for.
No.
So our website is brooke.org.uk. And we're also very active on social media. So our Twitter account quite often is focused more on kind of policy changes and things that are going on in the kind of in the sort of public space. That's at Brooke Charity on Twitter. And our Instagram space is very much a kind of sex positive space where maybe slightly older young people are coming to look for information, for access to our blog, And that is Brooke_sex-positive. The main thing we want to know is what teachers want. So always get in touch with us if there are things that you need. We've got an amazing training team. We're constantly generating new training. And one of the things that the pandemic did was it forced our hand. You know, for years we've been talking about, should we be doing this all online? Should we be providing electronic alternatives? And for all the harm that the pandemic has done, I know that it's pushed our digital offer. And we now have lots and lots of training that you can do online, either self-generated training in your own time or participating in training groups. So just look at the website. And if there's something missing, if there's something where you feel we really don't, we can't find what we're looking for, actually let us know, because we're always looking for great ideas about new content we should generate and new training opportunities.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Lisa, for your time, and thank you for everything today. And just to say a massive thanks to everything that you and your team do at Brooke. And I'm very excited this morning because I've got a follow back from Brooke on Twitter, which has made my morning. But they do have some absolutely amazing things. So thank you for that, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks so much for having me on. And I'm sure in the future, some of our educators would love to pop on and talk to you.
Absolutely. Open call whenever. Thank you.
Lovely. Bye.
Bye. Amazing. Wow. We have not even finished there. We've still got another guest, Lisa, joining us very soon, who has worked at a pupil referral unit, who will be joining us. And I just can't say, if you've just joined us now, my goodness, you need to make sure you go back and re-listen to this show on the Podbean Live, or indeed on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, because the guests I've had so far, Jenny, Hannah, Lisa from the Brooke PSHE Association, working on the ground as a secondary school teacher, as head of PSHE, have been amazing. And I'm just going through this, the chat that we've had here, you know, lots of people going off to school and great, and going back to listen for references. You know, this is always open call, so please do that. I'm going to be joined very soon, as I say, by my final guest today. And no doubt some of you are eagerly not wanting to go anywhere. So please make sure you stay tuned and listen for that. And here we go. I'm just going to introduce and let into the call Lisa. I do apologise for anyone that is listening and missing their daily news updates. Unfortunately, the Podbean does not want to play music today, so we won't have the usual news, but no doubt you'll be able to get the news if you listen to our upcoming shows on the Teacher Talk Radio. If you'd want to find out what those are, just go to our website, ttradio.org, or of course on our Twitter at TT Radio 2021, where you'll find all the amazing upcoming shows for today on there. Of course, well, you can contact me directly at Jamclar, JAMCLAR96. If you want to talk more about these topics, or you want to join a future show, I'm always open to have guests on here. Before then, I'm going to stop talking and hopefully connect my next guest, who will be joining us very shortly, and really excited for that. Good morning. Can you hear me?
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Good morning. Yes, I can. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm a bit nervous, but I'm very, very excited. How amazing were the previous guests?
Oh, and no doubt you are just going to be just as amazing.
Excited all night. I've been texting my friends, put it on social media. I've just been so excited about it.
Oh, thank you. So, well, we're excited to have you. So let's start, shall we? So if you want to introduce yourself, you know, your route to where you are now, how you got to where you are, everything like that, your life story, 30 seconds, as I say. Over to you.
My name's Lisa. It's not spelt the traditional way of L-I-S-A, but instead it's spelled L-E-E-S-A. It's kind of funny because anyone who's not met me will refer to me as Lisa, and I've just got to take it on the chin and remember that I'm a teacher and I've got a black belt in resilience and patience.
That's it, absolutely.
So I completed a degree in criminology, and whilst doing that, I was a youth worker. I loved everything about my job, and I just knew that I wanted to work with challenging young people. So when I completed my degree, I pursued a PGCE in social sciences and PSHE. And for my last PGCE placement, I was able to sort out my own placement. So I knew some of the young people that attended my youth club went to the local pupil referral unit. I contacted the head teacher there, who invited me in to discuss what I wanted from the placement. And from that day on, which is 8 years ago, I've been at the same place. I completed my NQT year there, well, here, and I've taught everything from history, geography, religious studies, business studies, GCSE citizenship, and most importantly, PSHCE, which we've this year just renamed as Curriculum for Life. I'm currently the lead for CFL, and I'm the deputy, the SL.
Amazing. Yeah. I mean, it's just amazing. And I'm going to be really honest, Lisa, because you are the, I think the first teacher that I've ever had on the show that works, you know, at a pupil referral unit. And I think actually in my personal experiences, although, we've had young people that sometimes end up in pupil referral units, you know, I've never experienced that firsthand. And I'm sure that's the case for lots of other teachers. So I wonder if you don't mind, before we sort of go a little bit more into talking about consent and peer on peer abuse and what you do, could you just sort of maybe tell, you know, what is a pupil referral unit? And how is it different to a mainstream school, if at all it is different in your mind?
So our pupil referral unit is a secondary pupil referral unit. It's like a second, third chance, fourth chance school where students are struggling in mainstream schools for various reasons. It could be behaviour, it could be medical. They could join us, it could be if they've been permanently excluded, or if they just need some respite and intervention. They come to us and they access education in the same way that they access education in a mainstream school. The only thing that's different is the class sizes are a lot smaller. We have 6 to 8 in the class.
Oh, wow.
So teaching is one-to-one, and the kids respond better to that. We're able to meet every child's needs, and every child is given a mentoring session, and we're able to keep in contact with parents on a one-to-one basis. And I think it's just more personal, and our pupils respond to that, and any educational barriers that they did have, we're able to break through and succeed.
Amazing. I mean, it's just... We're talking, you know, earlier I was talking to Lisa there when we're talking about what Brooke do and the conversation that they had, and this idea of almost, I guess, toxic masculinity and talking to boys and not making boys perpetrators and things like that. And that's difficult, I find, in a mainstream school. And lots of my boys really struggle when we do talk about it, and they do display sometimes quite not always the most positive behaviour when we start talking about emotions and consent and things like that. So I imagine, how do you find that for you? Because you are dealing with, you know, young people who perhaps really struggle with emotions and having those conversations. So when it comes to consent and talking about those more intimate topics, how do you find that and how do you tackle that in your classroom?
So obviously the class sizes are a lot smaller. So you're able to, when a pupil is talking, you're able to get through the whole class and ask for our opinion. Some pupils might not feel comfortable to say it out loud, but you can speak to them after, or obviously there's other ways to get them involved in the debate and discussion. I think we've all got, all our teachers here at the Pupil Referral Unit have got good relationships with our pupils. We've got 3 lessons of PSHE every week for all pupils.
Wow.
No matter what site they're on. So there's 15-minute lessons every week. Now, we also have 6 drop-down days, and we're able to reflect and if we need to, on a daily basis, if there's something that's happening in the school community or the wider community, we can deal with that. We've got really good relationships with the local police officers, all the mainstream schools, and we have a lot of guest speakers coming in. And our pupils respond well to that, because we know if there's an issue arising, we can just drop down some of the other lessons and focus on those issues and support our young people with that. And I think some of our lessons, like the challenging lessons, I tend to start off with asking our pupils what they already know about that subject. Now, I don't tell them anything at that point. I just say to them, what do you already know? I want you to write it down. I don't want you to put your name on that sheet. Just tell me everything that you know. And then they hand that back into me. And then the next lesson, I will look at that. So I'll look at that. And then the next lesson, I'll deal with any misconceptions, but not address it at any particular pupil. So pupils they're able to say, oh, well, I think consent is this, I think peer pressure is this, or peer on peer abuse is this, and I'm able to address any misconceptions class by class, lesson by lesson.
Do you know what? Just as you said that, I was like, there's such a brilliant and great way to tackle those conversations and just start the ball rolling on it, and such a simple yet no doubt really effective technique. That's amazing. So when you talk about, you know, peer on peer abuse, is this something that you would say you've talked more about following the Everyone's Invited, or were you always trying to talk about it and actually now it's giving you a little bit more of a push? Or what was your kind of response when that came out?
I think we've always spoken about it, but it has obviously, it's come to light more so now. Our safeguarding policies changed as a result of that. Our RSE program changed as a result of that. We used to only have two lessons of CFL curriculum for life, and now we extended that to three lessons. I think updating our staff on a weekly basis, so we have a staff meeting every Wednesday, and having a slot in that Wednesday meeting to go through certain updates, or asking staff to read updates, and if they've got any misconceptions themselves, to come to me. And the staff that are delivering curriculum for life every week, we've got a meeting on a Friday to go through if they've got any misconceptions, or if they want us to focus on anything, how do we go about tackling that. But our six drop down in curriculum days have been vital. Any concerns that are raised in the school and wider community, we've had guest speakers in that are relevant to our community coming in and speaking to our pupils, because sometimes our pupils respond better to when there's a guest coming in who's got that experience and can tell stories of what they've been through and break down any barriers that way.
Absolutely. And, you know, you talk there about kind of, you know, bringing guest speakers in and people that relate to their community. Have you got any examples of kind of, you know, a speaker you've brought in, or a moment where you've brought someone in and it's really connected with a young person?
So this one's not particularly based on consent or peer on peer abuse. Well, it could be actually peer on peer abuse. So I live in Lancashire. And just down the road from a school, it's about 10 minutes away, there was a 17-year-old boy who was out on a night out, and he got involved in a bit of a fight, and he was punched. He hit his head on the pavement, and sadly, he passed away. Now, having his brother and his mum coming to school to speak to our pupils to say this is the effect of what happened and we're living with those consequences, it was a real eye-opener for our students. And now we have that same guest speaker coming in twice in the year to speak to our pupils on a one-to-one basis as well in the classroom. I think getting to know what we have in the community, or engaging with the community, it works massively. And do you know what? Some of our students actually come into school and say, oh, miss, I know this person, or did you hear about this on the news, or I saw this. And that makes me excited, that the fact that they're excited and they want to know more about what's going on in the world. And I'm contacting the people that they want to speak to or want to engage with.
Absolutely. I think that's just, I'm getting like, you're talking, I'm getting goosebumps. I'm like, oh, that's absolutely amazing and so incredible. So thank you for
that.
Mostly
students in the pupil referral unit, because when they're in a mainstream school, it's usually 30 people in the class. And if they're causing any behaviour concerns, it's just easier for the teacher or the staff to ask that student to be removed. But whereas our students are in a small classroom setting, we're able to deal with that, and the student just likes to be listened to. And the Keeping Children in Safe Education update wants our children to be valued, and anything that they do, to say, to take it seriously. And we're able to do that in such a small setting.
Absolutely. And I think it's, you know, I think about my teaching, my school, and, you know, having 25, sometimes, you know, more students in a classroom, and we're tackling these conversations. And I do almost feel sometimes that I'm not able to fully do my job or do it in the best way, because, you know, you can't listen to 25, 30 people's views in one room. And that is really difficult. So I think actually, yeah, you're absolutely right. Particularly for those most vulnerable young people, to have that space where they can talk is so important. Do you find that you're consistently having to update and, you know, your curriculum for life and what you do? Are you constantly having to respond, and how do you manage that? And also in a way that we've talked about this in previous shows, like when consent and the peer-on-peer abuse and everyone's invited came back to the forefront, suddenly people were going back and changing things and changing their order of things and putting that forward. But then at the same time, how do you make sure you're not missing something else? And how do you negotiate your curriculum plan?
So at the minute, Curriculum for Life, also known as PSHE, we've got a link governor, and our link governor is absolutely amazing. I meet with him and I talk to him regularly, and we went through what I teach in Key Stage 3, what I do in Year 10, what I do in Year 11, and having that relationship with the governors, and so they're understanding what we're teaching. I think every school needs that. And yes, I do believe that changing your lessons and reflecting is good practice, because as educators, we should be reflecting on our teaching practice to meet the needs of our pupils who we have in front of us, and not just teach outdated content or things that we've been teaching in previous years. Obviously, I'm talking from a Curriculum for Life and PSHE background here. And I'm lucky because I've got those three lessons. So I know that, if I teach something on the Monday and something's being raised on the Tuesday, I've got that time allocated to deal with that on the Tuesday straight away, address those misconceptions, and then move forward with that. And having the 6 drop-down days in the year, obviously I can focus on all the issues. I think working in the pupil referral unit and working with vulnerable pupils, I'm lucky in that sense that I've been given the time, and PSHE and Curriculum for Life is seen as a core subject.
Amazing. And looking at consent then, where do you, and I asked this question right at the start of the show to previous guest and Jenny from the PSHE Association. So when we're talking about consent, where do you start with it? Because you're obviously coming at it from a secondary point of view as well, and you're getting kids coming in and out and changing. So where do you start with consent? You know, what's the most important thing about it for you and when you're teaching it?
So I believe, as I think everyone does, consent is a key foundation for RSE, no matter which age group you're teaching or working with. I think schools need to focus more on consent as an encouraging and positive thing, as what was discussed earlier, that can make intimate encounters healthier or better, rather than just framing the notion of consent on something that's needed in order for you not to get in trouble, or obtaining consent because you've been told you need it, but you don't understand why. So always asking the pupils, what does consent actually mean? And not them just rhyming off something that you've told them, being able to, for the students to give you examples. And that tea clip that you said on YouTube, our students will love that. Absolutely love it.
It's great. I think it's just, it's fun, isn't it? And they get it and it connects with them, I would say. I don't know about you.
No, definitely. And for some people that don't understand consent and using tea, using such an everyday thing, they understand it. And I remember being outside on duty, and I heard students talking to other students about it, obviously in the clip, and they were telling other staff about it as well. So what we are teaching them or going through in lessons, it's having a massive impact, whether it be a YouTube video, whether it be a debate, discussion, or handout, or anything. I think it's having a massive impact on our students.
Absolutely. And, you know, firing a quite a big question at you now, but I've no doubt you will be able to answer it amazingly as you have all these. So, you know, how can a school be one that turns around and says, and we see this all the time, and I know it's said in my school, and I know it's said on Twitter and everywhere and on Ofsted and etc. You know, how can we say that we truly have a safe culture and environment? You know, how can a school say that? What do they need to be doing or producing or showing to be able to say, actually, do you know what? We truly do have a safe culture and environment at X school.
I think in the past, schools got away with saying that there was no peer-on-peer abuse or no abuse taking place in the school. But since the Keeping Children Safe Education update, I think all schools need to always assume that peer-on-peer abuse is happening. So assume that is happening, and that's just to ensure that policies and procedures are updated and all allegations are taken seriously. I don't think schools should ever get complacent, and staff training should be frequent, and pupils should feel safe enough to make disclosures to teaching staff or support staff without feeling that they're being judged. So my biggest thing there is just assume that is happening and keep staff updated with any training and make our students feel safe. And now that could be done and asking all girls in a class and speaking to all girls together, or asking all boys to stay in a class and speaking to all boys together. There's various ways of doing it, but I just think breaking those barriers and making our children feel safe enough to disclose.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it's... You said a key word there, which I think is so true, is just keeping updated. And I think this is the amazing thing, but also the slightly difficult thing about Curriculum for Life, PSHE, RSHE as a topic, as a subject, is it is consistently changing. And it's not like other subjects where the answers are never going to change. 1 + 1 is always going to equal 2. That is never going to change. But actually, the rules around, or the laws around drugs, around consent, around rape, around sexual, whatever it might be, they will change and they will adapt year on year. So updating and keeping yourselves informed is so true about that. And one of the final questions I'm going to ask you, because I can't believe we're already coming towards the end. And, you know, there has been a reshuffle in the cabinet recently. So if you got offered the job of education secretary, congratulations, and we're looking at peer-on-peer abuse, consent, etc., what would you be making the government do? And I particularly want to ask you this because you are coming from such a unique sort of experience and background. So what would you say and make the government do?
Well, this is a tricky question because I would want the role of Prime Minister, not Education Secretary.
You're not quite there. You're just doing what all the others doing, making your way to the top.
So, but one thing I do feel passionate about is getting parents and carers and guardians involved in the Curriculum for Life, PSHE and RSE programme, and particularly sharing what schools are doing in schools with parents and carers and guardians, whether that be training, lesson content. And this just allows for discussions around peer abuse, consent and healthy relationships to continue at home. So I think once we've broken the barriers down with those at home, it'll allow the discussions and allow for healthy relationships to be a focal point of conversations at home. But yeah, just getting parents and those outside in the wider community involved.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And yeah, we'll campaign for Prime Minister for you. We'll start now.
I've got a question. I was reading through the notes and it said one of us gets a mug. So who's the lucky mug receiver?
Exactly. That's it. That's what I have to. To be fair, I'll get you all mugs. I have to get it now. That's it. But honestly, it's been absolutely amazing. And I think, you know, for you, I've asked everybody this. Do you have any final parting words of wisdom? And I will be campaigning for your mug as well for you. But do you have any final words of wisdom? And where can people reach out as well?
So my final words of wisdom is never be afraid to ask if you're unsure. If you are delivering PSHE, Curriculum for Life, or RSE, and you have any misconceptions or you're not sure, always ask if it's a colleague, it could be somebody in the wider community, or you can reach out to me. I'm always there to help and support. So if you did want to reach out to me, I'm on Twitter and it's miss_Amin, spelled A-M-I-N and then a one. So miss_Amin1 on Twitter.
Absolutely amazing. And just to add finally for you, Lisa, just got a lovely comment from the other Lisa, from Brooke, Head of Policy and Public Affairs, who just said, I feel really inspired by Lisa's conversation. And I can only echo that. You have been an absolute inspiration and you didn't need to feel nervous at all, because I think the words you've said have genuinely given me goosebumps. So thank you so much for your time and your words of wisdom today.
Thank you so much for having me. And I really enjoyed listening to the other guests as well.
Thank you, Lisa. Enjoy your day. I'm sure you've got a fun, full-packed day ahead.
Oh, I can't wait.
Thank you, Lisa. All the best.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. So there we go. How amazing is that? And I can't honestly say thank you enough to the incredible guests I've had today, Jenny, Hannah, Lisa and Lisa, who have been an absolute inspiration. And if you have just tuned in, please, I'm going to spread it everywhere. This is one of the... I'm going to say it's probably been my absolutely favorite show that I've ever done since being on Teach Talk Radio, because the guests and the comments have just been so inspiring. So please do share this. Please do look on Twitter for the show when it's publicized very, very soon and get this out, because it's such an important topic that everyone needs to listen to. I do apologize once again that today the sound wasn't working in terms of being able to play your news and our sponsors' updates. So very quickly, just going to go through, finally for you, some of the amazing sponsors that make Teachers Talk Radio possible. I mentioned a couple earlier, and one of the other sponsors of this show is MAL CPD. If you're struggling with people pleasing and finding coaching skills for school leaders' courses, alternatively, gain practical skills to become a strong and compassionate leader through the Assertive Leadership and Emotional Intelligent Leader course. All MAL CPD courses are accredited by the Institute of Leadership and Management. And you can find out more about that at www.malcpd.com. So thank you so much to everybody who has been part of the show. Thank you to those of you who have contributed through the conversation. And do remember, hashtag TT Radio and at TT Radio 2021. Don't forget our amazing guests as well, who have shared their resources from Brooke and the PSHE Association and all the other contacts, so you can get in touch with them direct. And you can find that either on our Twitter for Teach Talk Radio, or indeed look on my own Twitter at Jamclar, J-A-M-C-L-A-R 96, where I'll also be sharing all the amazing stuff coming up from Teachers Talk Radio. For now, though, this has been James Clark with your Wednesday morning breakfast show. It's been an absolutely inspiring, credible, eye-opening show. And I think it's now time for me to go and collect my Year 10 form. However you're spending the rest of your day, I hope you have a wonderful time. Enjoy yourselves, stay safe, and see you again next week for your Wednesday morning show with me, James Clark. Until then, bye-bye.